Hey, and welcome everybody to Tap Room Talks. My name is Wim Benz. I am the president and founder of Lakewood Brewing Company. This is our first iteration of Tap Room Talks. This is going to be a podcast that we're going to be doing over the next couple of months, and hopefully for a long time to come, we're going to be covering all kinds of different subjects. But today, we are going to talk about the history of Lakewood Brewing Company. With me here is Craig Bradley, who is our creative director.
Hello.
My lovely wife, Brenda Bush, who is our executive vice president.
Hello, hello.
We have our head brewer, Sean Vale.
Hello.
And we have a junior art director extraordinaire, Zach Attack. Zach
hello.
Phillips, how are you?
Yo.
Zach is one of our new members and helps out Craig and wrote down a list of questions that have been burning questions for him about the history of the brewery. So we are here to talk about the history of the brewery, how I got into it, and what a ride it's been for the last 4 years or so. So take it away, Zach.
All right. Well, I got to feel like I'm like a lot of Lakewood fans in that I love what y'all do, but I don't know exactly how it got to this point, how it happened. So just, I don't know, from the top, I guess, what got you all into this crazy business?
That's a long and convoluted story. How much time do we have today? So I'll just tell you a little bit of the history of me. So I was born in Belgium. I was born in the late 70s in Belgium and lived there happily for some time. And then my parents got an opportunity to move to Fort Worth, the Fort Worth area, to work for Alcon Pharmaceuticals. And they packed up the family truckster and we all flew over and have been living here ever since. So it was me and my parents and my brother, who was 6 months old at the time. We moved in 1985. Started as a young age. You know, we would go back every summer and visit the entire family. And, you know, the drinking age in Belgium is really more of a suggestion than a rule.
Is there one?
So
and what is the suggestion? 12?
The law is 16. I think you can start drinking beer at 16, but you know, it's not a very taboo thing there. You know, we weren't not a lot of Puritans in the history of Belgium.
Oh, tell me what it's like.
So, you know, we'd go back every summer and I was always allowed to taste beer and try wine and, you know, from a young age. So it was never that big a deal until I got to college and I was actually able to purchase beer, that I started looking for stuff that reminded me of home, reminded me of Belgium. So on my 21st birthday, at midnight, I remember it was a Sunday night, so I turned 21 at the stroke of midnight. I went to the Flying Saucer and bellied up to the bar, got my UFO Club card, got my t-shirt, and started trying all the Belgian beers that I hadn't had in a while. And, you know, this was in 99, so craft hadn't really taken off like we know it today. You know, you had Red Hook, you had Pyramid, you had Sierra Nevada, you know, all the older now breweries that were just coming up then. But a lot of it was imports. A lot of it was imports, and that's kind of where I started. And obviously, when you get the UFO Club card, you have to drink, you know, all, I think it was 100 or 200 beers.
All the beers.
Yeah, that's mandatory.
When you drink all the beers, then you get a bar tab. So, you know, I like completing a series, so I set off to try all the beers. So that was my first real introduction to craft beer. I didn't really start home brewing until, I guess, about 5 or 6 years later. So I'd graduated, gotten a job in advertising, and one of my buddies had gotten a homebrew kit. I think it was a Mr. Beer. Makes awful, awful beer. And we tried it. And
shout out to Mr. Beer.
Yeah, shout out to Mr. Beer.
Mr. Beer.
Sponsored by Mr.
Great.
Beer. Makes really bad beer. So, you know, it was really just, you know, sugar and yeast in a little plastic keg. That's about all it is. But it was cool, you know. It was a science experiment, and I've always been kind of sciencey, and I liked that. And it was, you know, it didn't hook me right away. It was like, oh, that was cool, that, you know. And I went about my business for a couple more years, and then he was like, hey, I'm gonna go up to the homebrew store. I want to try making beer again. Do you want to go? That's kind of where it started. It was going to homebrew headquarters up in Richardson, you know, talking with Kelly and the guys up there, And, you know, they were so passionate about home brewing that it really kind of rubs off. And we got a better extract kit, started with that. And on we went. So started making some batches. By that time, I'd moved from an apartment in Addison down to East Dallas, down in Hollywood Heights, and had a garage and had a kitchen and had space to do stuff, not just in the apartment. So then it just kind of grew and grew, and we got better and better at, you know, doing the extract and then the mini mash. Then we went to beer camp. So we went to, Siebel had an advanced home brewing course in, I think it was Durango. It is Durango. Spent a week there, and it was Chris White from White Labs. It was Randy Mosier, who's written a really interesting book, great read on historical beers and home brewing recipes and stuff like that. And then Ray Daniels, who later on went to start the Cicerone program. So we had a pretty good lineup of teachers. I mean, these are all, you know, guys that are very involved, not just in the home brewing industry, but in the craft beer scene as a whole.
And what did they call it? It wasn't really just beer camp.
It wasn't beer camp. It was the Siebel course for advanced home brewing or something like
right.
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we call it Brokeback Beer Camp because we got our girlfriends at the time. Oh. So Brenda and Alita made us a little care package because we were away.
Because they were at camp.
Because we were away at
camp. They needed care packages.
So they sent us a little care package with cookies and banana bread, and one of our friends, Ryan Beals, helped them out. Brokeback Mountain was the hit of the summer, so they superimposed our faces on the poster and printed off a T-shirt. And
For Brokeback Beer Camp.
Mm-hmm. We didn't... This package got opened in the middle of class because they had included a note to the teacher and said, please open this in front of the entire student body. So that was fun. Yeah, it was fun. Then we had a good time there and learned a lot. We went to Ska Brewing while we were out there at their original facility. They were doing, you know, a pretty decent amount of beer at that point, and they had, you know, 60 barrel and 120 barrel tanks, and we were just, ooh, oh my God, that's so big. We'll never get that big. We weren't really even thinking about opening up a brewery at that time. We were just thinking, hey, let's get better at home brewing,
cool, you know. Yeah.
So that kind of went on for a couple of years, and you know, moved out of the kitchen, moved into the garage, and took over the garage, more fridges for fermentation, and we took a metal sculpture class to build a homebrew rig. So we went to what was the name of it? The art. Art something.
It was either Craft Guild or Creative Arts Center. There's two.
Yeah, I think it was Creative Arts Center right off of Ferguson.
And I had gotten you the metal sculpture class as a Christmas gift, just thinking, you know, you have an art background, that'd be fun for you to do something different. And I thought you were actually gonna do
art
sculpture thing something. With it, not a brewery, but
yeah.
Was
so it was
that backfired.
Yeah, so it was pretty funny. We get there, and the teacher is, you know, she's all about making these really giant sculptures of figures and forms out of, you know, wire and cable and, you know, anything metal. And we show up with a bunch of angle iron and go, I just need something to cut this and build squares.
I need to build a base.
No, see, it's cubist. See, that's the
thing. Right. Yeah. It's very, cubism, it's brutalism. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we built a brew rig and built that out and just kept brewing in the garage. And then Trevor came along and Willis got kind of busy. My buddy Chris Willis, who I started with, got kind of busy and... Trevor was a friend of ours, and he really got into it. And we started brewing in the garage and got better and better and started winning winning awards, and we started entering homebrew competitions. So the day of our wedding, March 20th, March 20th, 2010. Oh, man. March 20th, 2010, day of our wedding, was also Blue Bonnet, and we won a gold, a silver, and a bronze, and got pretty excited about it.
So it was a memorable day.
It was a memorable day, not just the wedding, not just that it snowed. but that we got three homebrew competition medals, which was great. But I think that was kind of a turning point. We were all still in advertising and just doing our day jobs, but beer became a creative outlet, and it's a lot of fun. You know, it's that perfect blend of art and science. I think a lot of brewers talk about that. And you have to love both. You have to love both to really love making beer. Drinking beer, you can love whatever you want. But making beer, you have to love the art and you have to love the science if you want to make really interesting beer. So the path that my life kind of took was I'd applied to the American Brewers Guild. So there were a couple of places, just a few, you know, eight, nine years ago, that you could get a brewer certification. That was Siebel up in Chicago, which is where Sean got his education. There's the American Brewers Guild, which was a remote learning certification up in Vermont. They now have a physical location up in Middlebury, Vermont. And then there was UC Davis, and that was a full-on four-year degree in fermentation science. So UC Davis is close to, you know, it's in California, so, there's a lot of wine and beer in California, so they have a program. Now there's programs all over. Eastfield, just here locally, just started a program, a brewer's apprenticeship type program. So there's a lot of demand with 4,000 or 5,000 breweries now. There's a lot of demand for a lot more educated people. So I had applied to the American Brewers Guild. I said, why not? There was a 2-year waiting list, so I probably applied in 2008, and I said, okay, let's see what that's all about, and let's see if I can get in. And once I get in, I'll decide if I'm gonna go, because it's gonna be 2 years from now, so it's gonna be a little bit of a wait. Well, that only lasted about a year and a half. They had an opening 6 months early in 1 semester early, and I get this thing in the mail. It says, you've been accepted to the American Brewers Guild. And it took me a second. I was like, what? Oh, yeah. Oh, right. I applied to that. Right. Okay. Well, I guess I should do this now. So I did. And it was, it was about 6 months. And it was remote study, which was really nice, because I could keep my day job and I would just come home in the evening, have a quick dinner, and then just hit the books and watch DVDs of recorded class lectures for a while. And there were, weekly quizzes and all, but it was very comprehensive, and it's a really good base of brewing knowledge.
Every time I saw you watching the DVDs, it was just a guy with a blue pen on a whiteboard writing equations, and I'm like, this is the driest thing I've ever seen. Everyone's like, you're in beer school, awesome, and I'm like, it's more like equations on a whiteboard. But I was impressed that you were able to watch all those after working a full day, because I was thinking I would have been struggling to be in that classroom with that material, so that seemed difficult.
Thanks, honey bunny.
So you go through and you pass all these courses. Hooray you.
Right.
What's your next step?
So the next step to complete the entire program was to do a apprenticeship. You could pick from a bunch of breweries around the country, but we were, I think we were pregnant. Or very close to being pregnant.
No, we didn't find out that I was pregnant
until after I quit my job.
Yeah.
Right. So day before Christmas of 2010, I quit and went to work at Rahr Brewing out in Fort Worth the day after Christmas. So did that until about mid-April. So I started there as their apprentice. They like to call me their princess, because that got yelled across the brewery. It was, hey, apprentice. And somebody goes, did you just call him princess? They're like, well, we are now. So it was princess for the bulk of the time. But it was great.
It still is.
They still call me princess. I do have a tiara. But it was great. It was, it was get in, get your hands dirty. The first day I was on my back under a tank cleaning mold off a tank. That's part of the brewing. Stuff gets dirty, and it's clean, 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 and get all the nooks and crannies. I literally started on the floor and worked my way up. So I did that. Ended up on the kegging line. which is kind of where you start, either in kegging or packaging. That's where you start when you start working in a brewery. We found out we were pregnant and didn't really want to do the hour commute back and forth to Fort Worth to, you know, to take a major pay cut from, you know, from advertising wages to hourly packaging wages. And, you know, really started thinking about, okay, well, if we're going to do, if I want to stay in brewing, which I really did, we should open something on our side of town, you know, and be closer to home. And I started to think about what we wanted to do. So the first idea for Lakewood Brewing was to be a brew pub for Lakewood proper. So that's where the name came from. That's kind of the direction we wanted to go. The idea was not to have a full kitchen, but the idea was to allow people to order in food from surrounding restaurants. The rent really was going to be outrageous. The spot that we wanted is now behind the Chipotle, right by was that Richmond and Abrams? I think it was an old bank building. It is still empty.
Yeah.
It is still just
waiting there for you.
It's still waiting for. Hey,
just teasing.
You know, as soon as the law allows us to have two locations and have a tap room, so, you know, maybe we take a look at it. Maybe the prices come down a little bit. Who knows?
It immediately went from. I'm doing my thing at RAR, paying my dues, to I don't want to do this anywhere else. Like, screw this. I'm on my own.
No, it was my wife's pregnant, and I don't want to drive. I don't want to sit in traffic for an hour and a half each way.
I think you're still skipping a few steps here. So,
Your memory is much better than mine.
right. I mean, we had a lot of discussions even before you quit your job about whether you wanted to make your hobby be your work. I mean, there's, you know, everybody likes to say if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life and that type of thing. But then there's also if your hobby becomes your work, do you still have a hobby and will you miss having a separate hobby from your work and everything? So we had a lot of discussions about that and just about the, you know, we were a two-income household. We weren't sure how the whole brewery thing was going to go. And we talked about, you know, whether we wanted to take that leap to opening the brewery and take that step. And, you know, Wim was good and that he really wanted my support and everything like that on it. And I said, absolutely. I'm of the mindset that I would rather, you know, jump and break my ankle and fix my ankle than wonder what it would have been like to have jumped. And I said, you know, I don't want us to be 80 years old and go, gosh, I wonder what would have happened if we'd taken that step. So, so I said, yeah, go for it. Let's do it. And we started working on the business plan and, you know, looking for space and figuring out the investment and all that piece.
Yep. What was the scene at the time? What were you dealing with as far as
the scene at the time? So,
I mean,
for DFW,
there were no breweries in Dallas proper. There was Franconia up in McKinney, and there was RAR in Fort Worth, and that was it.
We had and then a couple of Humperdincks, and I think a BJ's here or there. You know, on the brew pub side, but a little more corporate brew pub.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, only two independent breweries.
Yeah, a lot of the old brew pubs had shut down by this time. They had all closed in like the late 90s, I
guess. There was a big boom in the mid 90s of brew pubs, and you know, that's for another podcast. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those had all closed. It was Yewa Creek and Copper Tank and
Root Street,
yeah. Hofbrau.
Mm-hmm.
All those had closed. I remember going to those with a fake ID. And their beer was pretty good. So we, you know, we started looking in earnest for a place to open up a brewery. And at the time, you know, we kind of had it in our head that we wanted to have a Dallas address. We're like, you know, we want to be the brewery for Dallas and have a Dallas address. Well, Dallas didn't make it very easy for breweries to open at that time. You know, that's gotten a lot better. Michael Petacolis really kind of spearheaded changing the regulations and the zoning so that he could open up his place. You know, he has a law background, which you know, I
helped
helps, which helps. And Mike, just coincidentally, Michael and I were in the same class at American Brewers Guild, so we got to know each other before either one of us had actually opened up our breweries.
Right.
So at the time, the zoning laws in Dallas were such that you had to be in a heavy industrial zone, which is reserved for, like, you know, pig slaughter farms and battery recycling.
Some good neighbors to have.
Yeah, some really good neighbors to have. So you had to be in a very heavy industrial zone. You had to have a special use permit, and a special use permit to produce alcohol in the city of Dallas.
But I think you couldn't apply for the special use permit until you had a space.
You had to have the space.
And
so
there was this big, you know, catch 22, like, all right, we need to find a space and sign an 8-year lease and then see if we're allowed to use it for a brewery. And I'm like, that makes me really uncomfortable. Because then what if they say no?
And the SUP process could take up to 3 months. So now you're, you know, what are you going to do in those 3 months? Just pay rent? On an empty building that you may or may not be able to use. You're not going to start build out because if you get denied, then you're starting all over again.
That's how they get you.
That's how they get you. So a lot better now, apparently. So we started looking at neighboring areas. We looked at Mesquite. We did actually look at two buildings in Dallas. And then I was at the realtor's office and there were two representatives in there, Paul and Iacco from the Garland Chamber. And they said, well, why don't you come check out Garland? And I was like, Garland? What's in Garland?
Hey, tread lightly.
This was 5 years ago. I have a much, much brighter picture of Garland now. But, you know, I didn't go north of 635. So I was like, Garland, okay, well, you know, I guess we'll go check it out. So, you know, we had our map, and we could start looking at the map. And it was like, okay, well, let's start scouting it out, you know. We really honed in on one property. It was not on the market, but the realtor knew that the current owner was wanting to move on from the space, and it was a great space. So that was our original building. So we moved into 2302 Executive Drive on January 1st of 2012. So it was an old carpet warehouse. There's lots of dust from tile and from, you know, from carpet and just being an old warehouse. And cleaned it up. My dad spent, I think, a couple of months painting the entire inside with a spray gun, all 10,000 square feet of it.
Two coats.
So he spent a lot of time on a scissor lift with a spray gun. You know, painting it out and making it look a lot better. So we built it out. So that took about 6 months. And then we brewed our first batch. I think it was July 16th of 2012. Mm-hmm. And that first batch was Rock Rider. Mm-hmm. So first batch Rock Rider. Second batch was Hop Trap. And that's what we went to market with. Unfiltered Rock Rider, unfiltered Hop Trap. But it was great, you know. We made beer and we sold beer. So we sold our first keg at Good Friends over on Peavey and Garland Road. And they had just opened. I don't think they had been open a year.
Yeah, they'd only been open a little bit. Yeah. They were pretty new on the block as well. And they were
already super supportive and wanted to, you know, Matt and Josh there, they get the brew scene and they got it early on. Mm-hmm. And they've been really supportive of us. So it was great. So we went there that day. We tapped our first keg, I think, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But people had started lining up. They opened the doors at noon. And we had done a lot of guerrilla marketing before the brewery had even opened, before we had even had a location. So we spent about a year
just
getting Facebook up, brewing homebrew test batches, and, you know, going out to the Libertine, going out to the bottle shop, and going to Brew Riot, and doing samplings and testing out our recipes. So we had a pretty good following. I think we had a couple of maybe a couple of thousand Facebook fans before we even opened the door, before we even brewed a drop, which was great. You know, I mean, I think everyone was really back then in my day, 4 years ago, whole 4 years ago, you know, the landscape was extremely different. You know, the vibe was, hey, there's this really cool thing called craft beer that's starting to happen in Dallas. So, you know, it's almost taken for granted now, just a couple of years later. But so we get there, you know, August 4th, 2012, we get to Good Friends a little bit early. People had been sitting there drinking water, waiting just so they could have a table. And waiting for the beer to be tapped. So it was tapped at 4 o'clock. I poured the first beer. I gave that to my dad, who has been, my entire family's been super supportive and, you know, couldn't have opened the brewery without them. And off we went, and the taps opened, and they literally did not close. I mean, they just opened up that tap, and it was glass after glass after glass after glass after glass, which was very exciting. And, you know, people just crowded at the bar and people just handing beers back, and that was
their best day ever at the time.
And we've done a couple of more of those, I think, because we still do our anniversary party there. But it was really exciting. You know, people were buying our beer, and that's
got to be a moment.
That was a moment. Yeah, that was definitely a moment. That's like, wow, what's going on? And then the panic set in.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Did that ever stop?
No, it hasn't stopped since. But, you know, I did have a moment there where I was like, oh, my God, people are buying our beer and they're drinking it. And then my second thought was, holy shit, what if they only get one? But they didn't.
Good.
So that was short-lived. People, you know, people kept coming back for more. We only had two beers, so there wasn't a huge selection. I think we had a couple of firkins, but that was it, you know. So it was great. It was a great day. And we still celebrate our anniversary every August 4th, or in and around August 4th.
Mm-hmm. That neighborhood.
Yep.
So who was it with you? Who was that first group of people?
Right. So the first group of people was, yeah, it was me.
Day one, day two.
Right. So Trevor came on as our sales side. I was the brewing side. Craig had been doing freelance work for us, and, you know, he came on very, very quickly after that.
And I was going out. I was kind of super fan number one, going out to all of their events and supporting them from day one. And at the time, I was kind of supposed to kind of be doing some freelance for them and kind of working on the projects. And then when I left, I wasn't doing it as much, and I was kind of freelancing on my own. So we just were kind of like, well, let's just kind of do it on our own and kind of work. So I kind of knew them. I knew the tone they wanted to go for. And I kind of asked, well, if y'all need any help doing anything branding-wise or creative or doing events, I mean, at some point you're going to be doing beer dinners, and I'll be happy to help that. So it's been cool seeing it kind of develops.
We had hired a brewer.
Craig did our first logo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, he modified the one that I did.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It was a collaborative effort.
Let's just be fair.
It was my logo.
I laid the groundwork. Craig just made it look good.
Yeah, you gave him the layup.
Yeah, that's right. So it was really just, you know, just about four or five of us. So yeah, Jason was our first brewer. And that was it. And we quickly started adding some people. I think by the end of the first year, we were at 13. I think by December, we were around 13 people.
I don't remember
Sean,
that exactly.
When were you on? You came in.
Sean came on January
February.
February of
2013.
Yeah.
So started as a brewer, although most of my time was spent
in the filter
in the cellar.
We had bought a DE filter. That was a very lovely paperweight for a couple of months until Sean came out and he's like, oh, I know how to run that. Oh, thank God. Okay, good.
Yeah, I remember you pointing that out, and I was like, kind of took a look at it. I was like, yeah, I'll get that run in a day. And the look on your and Jason's face was kind of like, what?
What? Oh, great. All right, good.
All right, let's do that. Awesome. So, yeah, started mostly filtering a couple months in, actually had my first brew at Lakewood, which was Till and Toil, the first brew of Till and Toil ever.
Yeah, I was I remember that. I was at CBC. There was this new hop out called Citra, or is it, no, it was Mosaic. Mosaic. Citra had been out for a little bit. But this new hop called Mosaic, and I was at the, I think I was at the Steiner booth talking to the guys, because we had gotten it thinking that, oh, you know, we should use X amount, and we kind of had our recipe kind of set. And after talking to the hop guys there, they knew that we're about to brew it. And I called Sean. I think you might have been in the brew at that point or pretty close to it.
I think I'd mashed in. So yeah.
And I'm like, wait. we're gonna change the hopping schedule. We're gonna change it completely around. So who knows? I don't know if we still have the original recipe. Maybe if we'll brew, what we thought we were gonna put in there, but
still using the same hops, just in different amounts at different times.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, but turned out great. Till's definitely one of my favorites.
Yep. And so there, just kind of to continue my story, just kept brewing more and more. And then, we needed two shifts brewing, so was brewing full time. And then later, 2012, I believe, Wim, Brenda, you guys took a vacation, and that's actually when I started scheduling out entire production. You guys were gone for a week. It just needed to happen, so I just kind of picked up the pen and started it. And,
yep.
So pretty much from then on, was doing scheduling, and then, again, continuing to brew, and then it was November of last year where I actually stepped into the role as head brewer.
Yep.
Where, I rarely brew anymore, but, production planning and all that kind of
plenty
stuff.
Plenty busy doing other
yes,
things.
my time is better used elsewhere for right now, so
right.
That's pretty much my story.
Cool.
All right, everybody. That was awesome. Let's take a little break and stretch our legs and get a glass of beer, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back, guys, and we're going to be talking about American Craft Beer Week. American Craft Beer Week is happening right now. It is May 16th through the 20th. It is a nationwide celebration of all things craft beer.
American.
Yeah, I think we have a pretty good amount of events set up throughout the week. You guys want to talk about any of those?
There's a lot of tappings going on.
Oh,
not only just us, but all craft breweries all around, local craft breweries, national craft breweries. There's going to be stuff going on. We have, I think we're going to be tapping Red Wine Till and Toil, and we obviously have Mole Temptress on. We have all of those in the
summer
tap room.
Pills on.
Summer Pills, our new summer seasonals on.
Available in a can this year.
Oh, yeah. New in cans, hooray.
Super excited about that. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on, and if you guys want to check out what's going on, go to our website, lakewoodbrewing.com, and go to the events page, and you can check the entire calendar out of all the events that we have going on through American Craft Beer Week. And going forward, we keep that pretty well updated. I know a lot of people are always looking for the elusive missing pint glass or missing temptress glass. We do all of our tap takeovers, and all of our pint nights are always listed on our calendar, as well as any special events that we have at the tap room at Lakewood Brewing Company as well.
Yeah, we also have a really cool event going on at the Ginger Man Lakewood on Sunday, May 29th, for that Memorial Day weekend. We are going to be joining Ginger Man and Lakewood Smokehouse and Jerry's Woodfired Dogs and Brass Tacks and all those guys out there in that Lakewood Shopping Center. We are going to be doing a block party out there. Come on out. It's going to be from 4 to 8, and we will be featuring All Call, our brand new Kolsch that supports the Guns and Hoses Foundation of North Texas. So if you guys are looking for something to do on that Sunday, come on out. It's going to be a fun time.
American Craft Beer Week is really great for, a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, are already well-versed in craft beer. But, this is really a great opportunity to grab one of your buddies who is, still in macro beer land, and go out, take him to a bar, take him to, a place that's got a couple of taps, and have a flight of beer. What's the worst that can happen? You might find something that you really like. So it's a great opportunity to support beer. Support local companies. Support local companies that support local jobs. It's a great time to be in craft beer. There's a lot of different flavors out there, and I guarantee you, if you're afraid of craft beer, there is a craft beer out there for you. We, as the craft beer community, make a ton of different styles, from, you know, something like a Helles all the way up to an Imperial Milk Stout and everything in between. So there is a craft beer for you out there. All right, well, that wraps it up for this first inaugural session of the Lakewood Brewing Podcast. As always, you can check us out on our website, lakewoodbrewing.com, Facebook, Twitter,
Instagram.
Pinterest. Do we have Pinterest?
We don't have a Pinterest.
I don't think we have the Pinterest.
Have the Pinterest.
That is something for me to do.
Zach, get on that.
Company Pinterest.
Company Pinterest. So thanks, everybody.
Any listener questions, you can email us at podcast@lakewoodbrewing.com or use the hashtag LBCcast on whatever social network you prefer. We read those. Ask us whatever you want to know.
That's it. Boom.
Talks is a production of Lakewood Brewing Company. All rights reserved where applicable. The song you're listening to right now is A-OK by The Lady Killers, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 Unported license. We thank The Lady Killers for the use of their song and encourage you to support the artist at theladykillers.bandcamp.com and at facebook.com/ladykillersuk. We thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next month.
Boom. Don't say boom on an airplane.
Lesson learned.
Lesson learned.
Damn okay. Angry birds.
All right. Let's do the intro again. Hey, and welcome everybody to... Ooh, that was a little much. Hold on. I'll start here and ease my way into it.